Welcome to the behind the scenes of Sir Philip Debarry. The origins of this were actually Gerald Debarry, but I ended up renaming it and rewriting a little bit because I found that just hearing about a bishop for 4 episodes was getting a little dull. So I ended up rewriting to match his brother, Sir Philip. I think it worked out quite well, but here's a little more information about Gerald. He's also known as Geraldus Cambinus, and he has many titles, including Gerald the Marcher, the Archdeacon, Bishop-elect of Derry Saint, Sylvester the Wildman, Prebend of Hertford and Marthry. It can be a bit confusing, but he was extremely influential. His family was a combination of the Welsh line of princes, such as Lord Rhys ap Gruffydd, and a bit of Norman Baron mixed in. His father was Sir William Debarry, and his mother was a daughter of a Welsh princess, a very famous princess, Nest, who was considered the most beautiful woman in Welsh history. Think of her as Helen of Troy, except in Wales. Therefore, I don't think it's much of a stretch to assume that both Gerald and Sir Philip were rather handsome, which I hope came through in the audio. Gerald was obsessed with many different things, but he never really excelled entirely at any of them. He was a scholar, reformer, diplomat, crusader, nationalist, naturalist, scientist, art critic, and writer. Gerald himself was mainly interested in whatever cause he was furthering at the time, and seeing that his work lasted. As a result, he was constantly writing and advertising what he had already written. He was researching one or the other thing, and had many projects going at any given time. Sound like most audio producers to you? That's what I thought. People often say the olden days were slow, lazy, and perfect. In reality, Gerald's life was as fast-paced and pressured as now, even without cell phones, and a good deal more dangerous. You could walk down the street and have your head split open. In his childhood, he wanted to be a priest, and often spent hours building churches with whatever was lying about, sticks, rocks. At one point, which I did cover in the audio, there was an attack near his home, and he snuck out through the ranks of soldiers in order to go to church and pray. As a result, everyone began calling him the Little Bishop, and he entered a monastery at around 15 years old. The rest of his family were loyal Normans, but little Gerald got it into his head very early that it was his Welsh lineage that mattered. He showed his rebel streak very early at the monastery, but they did not think seriously of the young man's unceasing study of the Welsh church and history. A fun little tidbit about where he and Philip grew up. The castle is available to rent. Yes, you and your friends can rent the castle for the night. I thought that was fantastic. And if I had a few hundred pounds lying about, I would so do it. Convinced that Cymru was being suppressed and enslaved, Gerald claimed St. David as his role model. You might know St. David as... well, some people think he was Merlin. I happen to subscribe to that view, and am considering doing an audio about it, as a matter of fact, so look for that in a few months or a year or so. In any case, Merlin, wanted the Church of Wales to be separate and go directly to Rome rather than bother with the English Church. With his noble Welsh connections, Gerald soon won support from the Welsh nationalists. King Henry II realized the danger of Gerald's outspoken and well-researched claims. When the young man became Bishop of St. David's, the king acted quickly. He disavowed the claim and threw Gerald out, and was frightened that the young man would begin a full-scale rebellion. The action was a direct attack against the Welsh and furthered the insults by replacing Gerald with a Dutchman. So you might recognize a lot of this from the audio, and this is, as I said, straight from history. King Henry II realized his mistake as anti-Norman sentiment grew in Wales. As a last-ditch effort, he asked Gerald to become his advisor. Gerald eventually accepted, though in this particular audio he was not too keen on it yet. Gerald was still very angry with the king, though his scholarship soon became famous. He found himself instructing Richard and John. Yes, the very chaps known for Robin Hood. Gerald bided his time, and often visited other Welsh rebels who were growing in number. He was determined to have St. David's, which is the bishopric that he was thrown out of in this miniseries, and he went to the Pope. Unfortunately, the Archbishop of Canterbury was dead set against him, for obvious reasons. Gerald had many projects going. One of them was denouncing the arms dealing going on by bishops in England. One of them was the Archbishop himself, who had made a tidy bit of money. Still, the Welsh wanted one of their own, and eventually Gerald was elected to St. David's. He wasted no time going straight to Pope Innocent III. He brought several books along with him, his own, of course, and presented them to the Pope, who actually liked them and began reading Gerald's works daily. Unfortunately, the Archbishop of Canterbury was far from done. He sent a series of hate mail letters to the Pope, and some of Gerald's supporters had been persuaded to change their mind. John was then King of England, and he convinced the Pope that there was more money from a different appointment. As a result, the Pope took away the see, and Gerald was once again on his own. He returned sadly to Wales, only to find the people would not even speak to him. The king made it clear any supporter of Gerald would be considered an open rebel against him. And legend has it, the only person who would speak with Gerald was an old woman who apologized that the Welsh had become such cowards. Gerald was not ready to give up. North Wales had always been more supportive of rebellions, and sure enough, the local princes and people enthusiastically hid him until he finally returned to Rome. His journey was horrendous. He was hiding in Runny the entire time. He even had to walk across the Alps during a storm. The Pope would not hear him this time, and ironically, he was jailed in France for being a loyal subject of King John. Finally, they realized their mistake and let him go. His hardships and constant travel left him wasted. He gave his lands to his nephew, who instantly turned against Gerald in order to keep them from the English lords. Gerald went to solitude and wrote. Ignored out of fear, Gerald lived the rest of his life quietly writing books. The Welsh princes secretly supported him and gave him a service at his death when he was 77 years old. The church would not even give him a eulogy. Gerald begged to be buried at St. David's, but to this day it is unknown if it actually happened. Gerald had written 17 or more books, had travelled all over Europe, and ended up dying forgotten and alone. If he had only lived a few hundred years later, he would have been a hero. But during his time, Wales was not ready to revolt, and still lived in fear of the Normans. Gerald was constantly giving out his books during his lifetime, and you must remember that they were all handwritten. He wasn't just printing out copies. You couldn't go to Kinko's. Paper was expensive, and writing was time-consuming. Much of Gerald's works have subtitles, with text under them that trails off on other ideas that lead to the next subhead. He wrote very organically, following his thought patterns rather than an outline. For example, he would start writing about the wit of the Welsh people and end up talking about their love of harp music or food. His writing shows an obvious love for his country and subjects, as well as painstaking research. His most famous books are Descriptio Cambrae, The Description of Wales, The Journey of Wales, The Instruction of Princes, and The Geography of Ireland, which is also very controversial, and I included some passages from it in the audio drama. Significantly, the part about how Irish always carry an axe from episode 1. There were actually 4 brothers, Sir Robert, Sir Philip, Sir Walter, and Gerald. We don't really have Walter in it. I thought it would be a little confusing to have 4 brothers. 3 is a much better number. So, he was dropped. It is true that they did go to Ireland during that time period. I did condense a few years to make it a little more exciting. I eliminated a very long siege and so forth. I did condense and move about a few years. I don't think it would be that serious. It is true that in 1185, Robert Fitzstephen and Robert de Bary were in the Siege of Wexford, and Sir Philip de Bary came at around the same time. Now, Sir Robert was killed in the Battle of Lismore in slightly different circumstances to the actual audio. However, of course, we don't know too much. Fitzstephen was distantly related, and what I've read about him, he was not a very nice sort of chap. I'm not saying that he actually did decide to kill Sir Robert, however, I wouldn't put it past him. Later, Sir Philip was given large tracts of lands and confirmed by King John. Now, Fitzstephen was not necessarily killed in that particular battle. However, Ralph Fitzstephen ended up ceding territories to Sir Philip, territories that might possibly have been Sir Philip's right, that the original Robert Fitzstephen in our audio had taken away. So, I did extrapolate during this audio. There are a lot of things in it based on historical facts, mostly the Gerald part, but I did make a few things up. I mean, part of it is that we don't really have that many records from the time period. This is the 12th century, and things are lost, or exaggerated, rewritten. You know how newspapers are today. They were... You can't really trust them, can you? That's enough of me droning on about the background history of all this. I will now turn it over to the post-producer, John Specht, and some bloopers, because we all know that's the only reason you listen to it this far.
Working on the DeBerry miniseries was a labor of love because the stories are good and the actors are fantastic. And it was a challenge, too, to find music that didn't have modern instruments in it, like piano. Since we're based in the 1200s here, we had to use lutes and, well, we did use symphonies, you know, but I think it added to it, not detracted from it. And there were so many different atmospheres, from a chapel to being outside to being in the battlefield. So lots of fun with sound effects. Owain was hilarious. Fitzstephen's was totally obnoxious. There is humor, tragedy, all the components to make a pretty fun audio.
Yeah, just poddling along. I've now finished my exams, and I am now free for the summer. So, bringing you much, much audio goodness. So, let's get started, shall we? From the axe, there is always an... Unlike the Irish, he uses it only on evildoers
We have 20 mangonels.
I don't know everything. I know very little, actually, but it was just the thought that occurred. Anyway.
I have my own castle.
It was in the year 1169. I remember. back when I was a very young man. That's the trouble with living so long. And walking the dark. I saw many things. What did I see? Find out in episode 4, coming up now. Indeed, Commander. Now lay in a course for the Beta Quadrant. Warp 9. There we are, episode 3 done.